Davies to get Constantine of Font. Lafondra away from Davies. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello and welcome to the Elm Park Royals podcast in association with the Reading Chronicle. I'm here again with Matt Joy. How are you doing, Matt?
Very well, feeling very pumped up with that techno music on the new intro there. That's really got,
it's lovely,
got me in the mood.
It?
Yes, done a good job with that. Yes, very well, thank you, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I've had better weeks in a Reading context. It's not been a great one, has it?
No. To put it bluntly, it's not. I think last weekend, okay, you know, didn't get the 3 points, but I thought there were still bright bits from the game. I thought it just lacked that final little bit of composure in front of goal. I think if Reading had played that game earlier in the season when all the players were firing as they were, I think it would have been a relatively comfortable win. Conversely, Wednesday night was a bit of a horror show, really, all things considered. Birmingham outfought, outplayed, outmuscled and outperformed Reading. You know, they were really good. Lee Bowyer clearly had put the fear of God into them, and they came out like a team possessed, and Reading just put simply could not handle it. I thought they were really, really good, but Reading were really, really poor.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Forest game. It's one that in the first 7 weeks, we had the chances to win that game. And in some ways, the performances haven't really changed since that 7 weeks. It's just the outcomes in those, you know, at the right end of the pitch and the wrong end of the pitch.
Yeah, I think especially at the start of the season, there's a lot of talk about XG and all that sort of things. And not saying that there was a correct point there, but yeah, it was at the start of the campaign, Reading was scoring with virtually every shot it felt like that was going on target. Whereas against Forest, it was barn door and banjos came to mind. But there was positive things to take from that performance. But less so on Wednesday night.
Yeah, the mathematics doesn't lie. You always revert to the mean or whatever the, you know, podcasts were saying. So Birmingham, yes, they did outfight and outmuscle us. Was there things that were tactically wrong, or was it just that this was a bit of a new manager bounce meets a team that aren't in the best of form? Like, they've been picking up wins but not necessarily playing that well.
I think that perhaps the plan that Reading had came out with, they simply couldn't put into action because of how Birmingham played. I don't necessarily think I disagreed with the formation or, you know, the lineup. I thought, looking at the team sheet before the game, I thought that's a promising looking lineup. But just the way that Birmingham from the off were pressing Reading so high, it was so hard to see Reading getting the ball on the deck and you know, moving it through the thirds. And later on, when Birmingham had 10 or 11 men behind the ball, understandably so, you know, clinging on for the result, there was just, it never really looked like Reading, unless they had an opportunity from a set piece, that they were going to break through an open play. They were just staunch rear guard action from Birmingham, and Reading just couldn't handle that. But I think the only area I was a little bit disappointed in, aside from that, would be I thought the defensive display wasn't brilliant. I thought Birmingham didn't have a huge amount of chances, and I thought a couple of the defenders looked like rabbits in the headlights a little bit when coming up against Djukovic and Hogan. They threw themselves about and played that kind of old-fashioned style of football that I don't know whether it was a case of Reading weren't expecting, but it was certainly one that they didn't step up to at all. It was a dominant display, and that was, I think, the difference. It was just, put simply, without meaning to sound like I've got a very limited footballing IQ, I think that is as basic as it can get. I think they just had more oomph, they had more, you know, anger, they had more, they looked like they wanted to perform, and certainly one man who was very angry was Veljko Paunović post-match.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't particularly happy with the Nottingham Forest display, but he sounded pretty angry after the game at St Andrews.
Yeah, it's tough to sort of, when you're tweeting out the quotes and you're putting them into articles and stuff, you can only obviously say them as they come. You can't put in a tone of voice, you can't put in any sort of measure of intensity. But I asked the first sort of three or four questions, and throughout that all, I was being stared dead in the eye by Paunović, which was a bit of a new one as well. But the tone of voice in his responses were clearly that of a very frustrated man. And I think one of the most telling quotes that came out from it was, without meaning to misquote him, but it was something along the lines of, so far this season, the team have had a lot of praise, you know, from the media, from supporters, and a lot of excitement has built. And he included himself in this. And now that, you know, we've got to pay that back. And it just seemed, without meaning to put words in his mouth, that he was kind of suggesting that, you know, it's not done yet. You can't just coast on the success and the praise that you've had early in the season. And I think that may have been what he was suggesting, although obviously, you know, you can interpret it however you like. That's certainly the idea that I got from him. It was very much a man who thought, you know, you can't rest on your laurels, especially at this kind of time in the season, you know, when we're getting to the business end of the campaign.
I always feel like Paunovic's press conferences are actually more for the players than they are for anyone else. He seems to be a very good man manager. I just wonder whether you think that those sort of messages are directed at anyone in particular in the dressing room, or whether they are just meant to be a general kick up the backside.
I think it would probably be unfair for me. You know, good question, but I think it would be a little bit unfair, obviously, to put, you know, names in his mouth. I could certainly give my, you know, my perspectives on who I think in recent weeks has you know, dipped. I think Lucas Schell again, and looked like the frustration's got the better of him. I think Liam Moore had a bad game. I didn't think that any of the back line really, fullbacks didn't push forward. I thought that Mate looked relatively bright. I thought Elise looked okay. Actually, I thought Elise looked quite good. He put some good set pieces in, but I think there was just it looked like there was a bit of a lack of willingness to win ugly. And I think that you could probably pick out a number of the players who that could apply to. As for whether the press conferences are for the players, I think there's probably a touch of that. He's definitely, after big wins, you know, he's very complimentary. So I think it's only fair for him to, you know, be as upfront as he can when, you know, the results aren't going their way. And normally, I would say he does do that.
So after the disastrous midweek, do you think that we will go back to the 4-2-3-1 that kind of saw us have a bit more success earlier in the season? Obviously, I feel like we were more playing the 4-1-4-1, 4-1-2-1-2. Yeah, 4-4-2 diamond. Let's go with 4-4-2 diamond. Because of injuries and just the personnel we had, some of those players seem like they're coming back now. I think that the return of the 4-2-3-1 is probably most likely. What do you think?
I would agree. Yeah, as you said, it's the formation that Reading have had the most success with this year. Obviously, Mate got his first start and had obviously played off the bench last weekend over Yasharia. Andy Rinomota back in the squad on Wednesday. So you would have thought that stick with what you know. It would be interesting. The only thing I would say to that would be, if we do play that, who starts up top? Because I think maybe over the last three games, if you just take those in, you know, on their own, you could probably make a case for Lucas Schell dropping to the bench. I think that George Puskás has maybe just done a little bit more. Obviously, he got the goal a couple of weeks ago, and I think he's looked relatively good in the other games, but then Lucas Schell, he just seemed like he's dipped in confidence, and perhaps he just looked a little bit jaded due to the sheer amount of games that he's had to play. So that would be my only query, is if you do go that, in, you know, if you do play in that way, would you want George Puskás playing in the lone role up top? I would argue that he's not best suited for that. I think you get the best out of him with a strike partner. So, I think it depends on what side of the coin you look at it. I think Reading will revert to that, but I'm certainly interested to see how that strike force lines up. You would expect, obviously, Ajari, Elise and probably Mate to play in that three behind with Rinomota and Laurent a bit deeper, but it'll be interesting to see if Reading do revert, who gets the nod up top.
Yeah, I think what I would say is that a lot of Reading fans' experience of Puskás as a lone striker was in Bowen's system, where he really was a lone striker. There was almost nobody around him, whereas this Paunovic side seems like they get bodies forward a little bit quicker. So maybe that'll be helpful. I guess the other question is who comes into the defensive screen. whether McIntyre stays there or Rinomota drops out. And if McIntyre drops out, does he actually drop in centre-back or do we keep Holmes there? So there's a little bit of a reshuffle maybe around that defensive unit too.
Yeah, I think I would probably be tempted. I think on recent form, I think McIntyre doesn't deserve to drop out the spot, drop out the team, sorry. I think he's been one of Reading's most consistent performers in recent weeks, no matter where he's played, really. I think Reading are missing Michael Morrison. I think there's no doubt about that. I would probably... I think you've got to have Rinomota next to Laurent Pulley because throughout the season, they've looked probably the most consistent part of the team. You can very rarely say that Reading have dropped points or even dropped goals as a result of those two. They bring so much solidity to that team that you would have thought that Paunovic would want to put those two back in the midfield. I'd be tempted to probably drop Holmes to the bench, but based on nothing other than I think that Liam Moore, although he had a disappointing game on Wednesday night, I don't think you probably want to take out your skipper on the basis of one, touchy performance. I think McIntyre would probably be best off dropping back and Yeardom and Richards at fullback. I think Yeardom especially has been really, really good in recent weeks. I thought he was really good against Forest. Obviously, he got a goal and I think he got an assist against Wednesday. So, yeah, I think he deserves that right-back spot. And then, again, Richards, you can't really look past him.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting because obviously QPR at the minute are playing with Charlie Austin up top, who's a completely different threat to someone like Bukovic. But they do have Lyndon Dykes. I'm not entirely sure where he plays across the front line, but he is one of the front three as well. Could offer something similar and bully Moore a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, it's a fair point, and I think, that's a very fair point. I think that Liam Moore, I would say that normally Liam Moore is up for the fight. I would never normally doubt his ability to play against the more physical, strikers in the league. I think he's got a good balance of sort of strength, and he's got a good balance with the kind of pace that he can deal with some of the nippier strikers. So I think it was an off day, but I wouldn't say that, I would be worried against any sort of physical threat. You look back at games like, I think, the Cardiff game earlier this season, I believe Liam Moore's playing that one with Kiefer Moore, who's 6 foot, who knows what, and dealt with him well. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily want to say that, okay, I have no hope for Liam Moore against a physical front man. And equally, I think Holmes also didn't necessarily raise his performance levels to the level required against the physical front men in midweek. So if you are making that argument with Liam Moore, you've probably got to look at the same argument with Tom Holmes as well, just based on that game.
Yeah, trying to listen to the BBC Radio Berkshire commentary of Moore versus Moore was a little bit difficult without the picture there. So this is obviously the last game before Reading get a week off with the international break. Two players who won't be getting much rest are Moore and Puskás. They're off to their respective international teams, Moore being called up for the first time by Jamaica. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Reading have always had a link with Jamaica. Well, not always, but over the last few years anyway. So it's felt weird not to have a Reading player in that team.
Yeah. Obviously, Joby McEnough was a real stalwart of that team, and yeah, you think that Liam Moore, it's been a long time coming for him because his performance levels have normally been pretty high. Reading haven't had the best of seasons, but Liam Moore's normally one of the most consistent performers, or has been in recent years. So good on him. Yeah, it's good to see him get that cap under his belt. I think I was surprised to see Tom McIntyre not going to the Scotland squad. I did do a little article about it. I think look at some of the names in there, you think, just for his flexibility, if nothing else, I think he's shown that he can play pretty much three separate positions on the pitch, and a young lad. And it's a bit of a surprise. And I think Omar Richards could also perhaps argue that he deserves a spot in the under-21s side. But best wishes to Liam Moore. Hopefully, it all goes well with his debut, and hopefully George Puskás can continue, as he's got a relatively good record, I believe, for Romania, something like 8-20. So if he goes out, notches a couple more, keep that confidence level up, then only Reading can benefit.
Yeah, I think with Tom McIntyre, it might almost be that it's counted against him, the fact that he hasn't really played any one position for too long this season. We as Reading fans obviously know how good he is, but maybe the scouts haven't really established that yet.
Yeah, very fair point. And obviously Steve Clarke in charge, perhaps there's a little bit of bitterness towards Reading. No, I joke, there's probably not.
No, there definitely is.
I'm not saying anything, but you make a good point. And yeah, they may be looking for a bit more solidity. They perhaps Scotland are a side who don't necessarily have the comfort of being able to experiment, given, yeah, put simply, the quality of their national side in comparison to some of their opponents. So yeah, it's a fair point, but I don't think it'll be long, certainly, if McIntyre keeps up the form that he's shown in the last few months, to see him get his first senior call up.
So wrapping it up, what is your prediction for Saturday? Do you think they'll go back to winning ways, or are you a little bit more sceptical?
I'm going to say that Reading will win. One of my close friends, Nick Tunney, the guy who did my job before me, is a lifelong QPR fan, and I don't think I'll hear the end of it if I predict that Reading will do anything other than a win. So if he does listen to this, I've got to back the team. And no, I think that if Paunovic is true to his word, and you know that level of anger was what was received in the dressing room, he said that, you know, what happens in the dressing room stays in the dressing room. I suspect that the players got a bit of a, you know what, after the game. So hopefully if they've reacted to that well, yeah, I think it's a massive, massive game. If Reading don't pick up 3 points, you know, that is going to be a worrying international break. So yeah, I'm going to say it's going to be a bit of a nail biter, but I reckon 2-1 Reading.
I think I'd take that. Scoring two goals recently feels like a bit of a challenge, but against fake hoops, yeah, it'll be easy, right?
Yeah,
anyway,
sure.
Thanks very much, Matt. Next up, I talk to Loft for Words about the QPR side. I'm here with Clive from Loft for Words. How are you doing, Clive?
I'm good, mate. A bit better after last night's second half comeback. But yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, QPR are starting to kick into a bit of form, aren't they? Or, well, they've been in a bit of form for a while. Talk us through how that's come about. Before New Year, things were going pretty terribly wrong for you. But since then, I think it's 9 wins in 14 or something. It's all turned around.
It has, yeah. I think a lot of us were quite worried at Christmas. You've got to look at the quality that went out of the team last year. Ryan Manning went to Swansea. Grant Hall went to Middlesbrough. Birieze obviously went to Palace. We couldn't sign Naki Wells at the end of his loan. We couldn't sign Hugill at the end of his loan. Mark Pugh didn't sign on again. So that's a hell of a lot of players to lose out of the team. 45 goals went out of the team. Obviously, Brightus A. Samuel's moved on since. So it always felt like it might be a struggle when you're recruiting, trying to replace players of that calibre on the budget that we've got. And before Christmas, it was looking pretty bleak. Went on a 10-match run of games without a win, of which the Reading home game was one. And yeah, just not enough goals in the team. Lyndon Dykes and Macaulay Bonn haven't really worked as signings. And yeah, it's turned around since January. We've changed formation and gone to a back three, which suits the defenders a lot more. Stops our pretty mediocre fullbacks getting exposed. Charlie Austin's obviously come in, which has gone a long way to solving the goal problem. And Stefan Johansson's come in from Fulham, stiffened the midfield up. He's been fantastic. So just those additions in January and the change of formation have really spun it around for us.
In that period, you've obviously won a lot. You've lost a few games that maybe you should have won as well. You don't seem to be a side that draws very much since January. Is that just fine margins, kind of like in single game issues?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Reading have obviously done okay this season, but the schedule, the way it is this year with the shortened season, we've just really struggled to find consistency. We've been particularly bad, and it's relevant to this game. Backing up on a Saturday after we've had to play Tuesday or Wednesday, I think we've won two, drawn two, and lost seven of those Saturday games after a midweek. And when you compare that to when we've played after a break of 8 days or more, we're unbeaten in six. I think we've won three and drawn three when we've had that week to prepare. Mark Warburton always goes on about his time on the training ground with his team and stuff like that. It really gets his back up when the fixtures are as they are. So I think that's gone a long way to it. Some of the games we won could easily have gone another way. Brentford at home, Blackburn at home, we won sort of single goal margins. And equally, the games that we lost, you know, Huddersfield at home, we had an amazing chance to go 1-0 up, and then it's a different game. Birmingham away, we were winning right through to the 82nd minute, and I still don't really know what happened there because Birmingham are terrible. So a lot of the games could have gone the other way. Almost every game we've played this season, bar maybe Swansea at home, Huddersfield away, two or three examples, every game we've played could easily have been the same score the other way around with very little difference in the game. I just think that's the Championship this year.
Yeah, I think Reading fans know about Birmingham as well, so I wouldn't worry about it. So who are the real QPR? Is it this unbeaten kind of, well, not quite unbeaten, but decent form, or is it the pre-Christmas, or, as I assume you're about to tell me, somewhere in the middle?
Well, if you took Stefan Johansson back out of the midfield and took Charlie Austin back out of the attack, it would be the QPR from before Christmas. They have made a big difference. I don't know. The problem we've got is we have, over recent seasons, been basically reliant on and beholden to whoever we've got on loan. And if you get good loans like Naki Wells and Jordan Hugill, then, you know, the team goes in that direction, same as it's doing now with Austin and Johansson. And then if you get maybe less good loans like Tom Ahmed, it goes in that direction. It's a real shame that the signings of Bonn and Dykes haven't worked at the moment. They may come good, I guess, because that was the sale of Eze gave us a rare chance to actually spend some money and own some strikers rather than loaning them. And for neither of them to have worked out is a bit soul-destroying, to be honest. Hoping Palace sell Eze to AC Milan and we can have a crack with the sell-on fee and try again. But at the moment, the real QPR pretty much depends on who's on loan to it.
Well, as a part Scotsman, Lyndon Dykes has a little bit of my affection. That man wins everything in the air when he's playing for Scotland.
Well, he does for Scotland. I mean, Lyndon played very well last night against Millwall. So I'm hoping that it turns around. But yeah, we'd like a bit of Scotland, Lyndon Dykes. He looks a different player for Scotland. He looks sort of happy and confident. QPR, it's a little bit, I think the pressure and the long run without the goal seems to be getting to him a bit. He looks to be lacking a bit of confidence.
One of your other players that Reading fans will be particularly interested in is Rob Dickey, having been a Reading player through the academy. How's he doing for you?
Well, it's between him and the goalkeeper for the player of the year. I think the two of them are pretty much out in front of anybody and everything else. Few nervy moments at the start of the season, stepping up into the Championship. He's not the quickest. And at the start of the season, when he got caught out for pace, he had this tick of reaching out and grabbing sleeves. Should have given a penalty away at Coventry in our first away game. Did give away a penalty and got sent off at Barnsley in like our fourth away game. And we were like, is this lack of pace going to be an issue? But he's very, very quickly adapted to the league and been absolutely outstanding for most of the season. And it's either him or Senny Dieng for player of the year for me. Stepped up seamlessly. Whether that lack of pace will deter, you know, clubs higher up looking at him, I don't know. I personally think he's great, particularly in this back three. It really suits him, Barbe and Device. I don't really have a bad word to say about him, and I'm surprised Reading let him go.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those where he didn't really have a chance to break into the team with who we had there at the time. Yeah. And that's come back to bite us a few times when you look at Reading players. Tariq Fozu, obviously at Brentford now, doing very well. And then he's gone out of my head. The guy at Bournemouth, right back.
We've got one or two like this as well. players that are in our youth team.
Even Charlie Austin, ex-Reading, and then we let him go, and he had to build his way back up, but he's done it now. And what we wouldn't give to have someone other than Lucas Joao scoring goals. Although now we've got Yaku Mate back, it's not quite as much of an issue.
Yeah, you see the thing with Joao, because I watched Joao quite a bit of Sheffield Wednesday and didn't think that much to him. Do you not think with him, I mean, not anybody, I'm not saying I would, but do you not think with a midfield as good as Ijaria, what's his name, Elise, and Josh Laurent, who escaped out of our youth academy, do you not think anybody could play up front for Reading?
That's a really interesting one. So conceptually, I think that is true, but it hasn't been the case over the last couple of years. Mark Bowen designed a system that basically required Lucas Joao to be up front, and then when he was out injured, it kind of all fell apart. And then this season, it's been a little more like that, but I think we still need that hold-up play for some reason. Yaku Mate being out was a real issue because he was the one that ran in behind when Joao was holding up the ball, so those two play off each other quite well. It's an interesting one because on paper, Reading's midfield is very good, but it doesn't necessarily always fire.
Yeah. Well, I'd take it over ours.
Well, so one of your midfielders I am quite interested about because in January when Michael Elise was potentially leaving, people were doing scatter graphs of everyone in the Championship, and Elias Chair was up near Michael Elise. Is you haven't mentioned him yet. Is he just someone that kind of goes under the radar? Is his stats better than what he shows on a Saturday?
Yeah, he's quality. He's a good little player. I mean, obviously his height is the big thing with Chair. Is little more than 5'2", although he disputes this. But it says 5'2" on the official website, and having stood next to him, he's not much more than 5'2". But yeah, good player. Came up through the ranks, had a good loan spell, broke into our team and has progressed. They're kind of, you know, been grooming him to replace Eze. Eze's a bit of a once-in-a-generation talent, so that's a tall order. But he's very good. He's top scorer this year. Strong for somebody that's that small. He doesn't get shrugged off the ball. Very rarely, touchwood, gets injured. You know, basically played every game this year. He's been rested a couple of times just lately. Fair criticism, he can hold on to the ball a little bit too long. He loves coming in off the left onto his right for a long range shot. And when he was at Stevenage on loan, he basically ran his own goal of the season competition. Some of the stuff he did there was ridiculous, like just not fair him being in League Two. And he can be a little bit greedy in, you know, always looking to get it onto his right foot for that shot. And Charlie Austin's been letting him know in a few recent games when he's gone for the shot instead of the pass. But so it's a minor criticism. He's a lovely little player. I'd expect clubs to be looking at him in the summer and beyond.
So turning our attention to Saturday, you're obviously coming off that win against Millwall, second half comeback. What are you expecting Saturday to be like? You've said that maybe you're not the best coming off midweek games, but is that momentum from the second half going to carry through, or are you less enthusiastic about that?
No clue. Absolutely no clue. And I didn't really have a clue before, but if last night has brought anything home, it's that I really don't know what I'm talking about, because if you look at my tweets in the first half and up to halftime, I just felt like we got it massively wrong against Millwall. We went big and physical, thinking they were going to be big and physical and trying to deal with them at set pieces, and they just weren't like that. And they played round us, went 2-0 up, should have been 3. I just felt like Warburton got it wrong last night and had a bit of a bitch and a moan on Twitter at halftime. And then obviously we've come back and won 3-2 and made me look like a right arse. So I don't know. Apart from, like I say, we do not back up well, particularly when it's Wednesday, Saturday. We seem to really struggle with that. And we have had a lot of games in this little clump between international breaks. I'm not that confident based on that. But honestly, predicting QPR at the minute, like, who would have said that we'd beat Brentford at home and then lose Birmingham away and stuff like that? They're a little bit wild at the minute. So I can't help you. You probably know more than me. Like, I just I watch them every week, and I just can't call them now. They're impossible to predict what they're going to do.
Well, it's interesting because I think Reading, in some ways, play to the opposition. Veljko Panovic definitely sets the team up that way, and that ends up with a lot of very close games. It's anyone's game by the sound of it. You told me before that you're not going to give me a score prediction. Do you have a score prediction?
No, I'm not kidding. I'm going to dodge it and say something silly, just because whenever I predict QPR are going to win, they never do, which means that I have to predict that we're going to lose, but I don't like doing that. And people give me a lot of grief for it. So I don't know. It is so hard to call because I really didn't fancy us at Bristol City a fortnight ago with Nigel Pearson going in there, and we hadn't played particularly well in the previous game. So I probably would have backed us to lose at Bristol City, and we were brilliant and beat them 2-0 and best we've played all season. We then come out of that and go into Huddersfield at home, which looks a bit of a gimme given their away record. Lost 1-0, deserved to lose, only had one shot in the game. Came out of that, went 2-0 down at home to Millwall, came back and won 3-2. So, score predictions with QPR at the minute are just a nonsense. What should we do? Should we just say 1-1 and leave it at that? But I genuinely, even more so than normal, don't know.
I think I'd probably take a 1-1 coming off the back of a defeat at Birmingham. But, it's an odd season for many reasons, not just the fact that Reading have been on TV so much and neither of them have been the QPR match. Yeah. Seems like Sky Sports.
This is true, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, Sky Sports are trying to make a rivalry that isn't really there.
Well, we've asked this question every year as well. Do you reckon they just literally go, "Oh, look, they've got the same kit," and put the game on just for that? Or I've never understood why Reading QPR is on the telly every year, although obviously not this year.
And they're slightly close together than most yes, of our other sort matches. Of.
Well, you wouldn't want to go from one to the other for fish and chips, would you?
It's so annoying as well because it's always on like a Thursday night in January and we always lose 1-0 and it's always a horrible game. We kind of feel
the same about you guys. So we can't both be losing these games 1-0.
Well, I just remember, I can't remember if it was the one, somebody got sacked after a 1-0 QPR loss and I can't remember which manager it was. And then it was either the same game or a different one where Jamie Mackie came back and scored in front of a very sparsely populated crowd.
Yes, good night.
No, it was not a good night. That was.
I feel like we might. Did we get Brendan Rodgers to sack at Reading back in the day? I'm sure we beat Reading like 4-1 at Loftus Road, one of Rodgers' last games. And whatever became of him,
Yeah. Oh man, I wish the Rodgers that was at Leicester could have been the Rodgers at Reading, but trying to play that style of football with Alex Pearce at the back was just never going to work.
True that.
Well, I think that's a relatively good place to leave it on the back of a chat about all our defeats. So,
and I've dodged the prediction, which is what I came here to do. So that's good.
Yeah, perfect. Well, thank you very much, Clive. You can go and read Loft for Words, which is an excellent title, if nothing else. And good luck for the rest of the season, but I'm hoping maybe not Saturday.
Yeah, maybe not Saturday. Well, we'll see. Thanks, mate.
Thanks.